So we finally have moved on from the Kachim thing. So we're skipping now, not really skipping. We'd gone out of order. So now we're on Chaf Aleph Amar Aleph at the two dots in the middle of the page. So this sugya, to fully understand it, we're going to really need to see almost an amud worth of Gemara, which is what I wrote in the email. The reason we're not going to get to so many of the makaras, I made a minimal makara sheet, is because to fully understand the sugya, we need to basically see from here until amud beis. Now the topic we're going to be talking about, we'd already started discussing this in the previous sugya, but we're going to start fleshing out here, is how exactly we define the exception from the permission of Ochel Nefesh, right, that on Yom Tov, you can cook, you can perform a lachot for the purpose of food, how we define the exception of non-Jews, of animals, other cooking, other malach, other preparing you might do, but not for Jews, how exactly do we define the exceptions? Why are they excluded? How are they excluded? To what extent are they excluded? And the like. So starting in the middle of the page. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, Behema, chetzeh shel nachri, v'chetzeh shel Yisrael, mutter l'shochta b'yom tov. D'efshar l'kazayis baser b'lo shchita. So if you have an animal which is half owned by Jews or and half owned by non-Jews, so you're allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov because since the animal is owned by both, if the Jew wants to get his portion, he has to shecht the animal. He can't get his kezias of meat, or he can't get any of his meat without shechting it. So it's true that now you've prepared half of the animal for the non-Jewish owner, but that doesn't matter because there's no way of accessing the Jewish portion of the animal without shechting the entire animal. Now, we'll come back to the question of whether the Gemara means this literally, because as we noted already, now it's like 2 months ago, the words Behema, Shel, Nachri, and Shel Yisrael, while literally they mean an animal owned by a Jew or an animal owned by a non-Jew, it's not clear that that actually matters. The simplest understanding of Ochel Nefesh, of the permission to cook, to shecht, to do whatever you need for food on Yom Tov, is not that it matters who owns the animal, it matters who the malacha is being done for. Despite that, we know that there are some achronim who take this very seriously and assume that the Gemara is literal, that what's important is not just who you're doing the malacha for. Right? It's not just important that you are cooking or shechting for a Jew on Yom Tov. The Jew also needs to own the animal, and you can't shecht a non-Jew's animal for the sake of a Jew. That was the position of the Avnei Miluim. We'll come back to that. But the Gemara asserts that even though Ochel Nefesh does not apply, at least seemingly, to non-Jews, if you have a co-owned animal, you are allowed to shecht it so the Jew can access his portion of the meat. However, Isa chetze shel nachri, the chetze shel Yisrael, if instead of an animal you have dough, half which belongs to a non-Jew and half which belongs to a Jew, so then asur lafosa biyom tov, do efshir leila miflage belisha. So then you are not allowed to bake the entirety of the loaf, the entirety of the dough on Yom Tov, because, again, you're allowed to cook on behalf of Jews. You're not allowed to cook on behalf of non-Jews. And while the animal, in order to access the portion of the animal that belongs to a Jew, you need to shecht it, and now what implicitly happens is that the non-Jew gets his portion. That's not true by dough. By dough, you could just divide it down the middle, and you could give the Jew his portion, bake that, and give the non-Jew his portion, and do whatever he wants with that, but you don't have to be involved in baking. So the Gemara then says, okay, Masiv Rav Chana Bar Chanilai. So Rav Chana Bar Chanilai challenges this, and he says, Isas Klavim, we have a mission on Chala, which says that if you have dough which is meant for dogs, and we'll have to come back to what that means, not this week. The Yerushalmi has three opinions on how to understand this, but we'll leave that for the moment. If it's not only meant for dogs, right? It's a flour, it's probably it's a coarse flour, so it's not the type of thing that human beings would ideally eat, but it's also not so terrible that they only give it to dogs. So it's some sort of middle quality, such that both the animals will eat from it and the shepherds will also eat from it. So then, since it's meant for human beings, chayeves bechala, you have to separate challah, because you wouldn't have to separate challah from pure dog food. Uma arvinva, mishtatvinva, and you can use it for an eruv chatzeres or a shituf mavos, because again, you're only allowed to use human food for the food for an eruv and a shituf. And you can make a bracha on it, mezamnalah, you can make a zimun, v'nefes beyomtov, and you can bake it on Yom Tov, Adam Yotze Bayidei Chovaso BePesach, and you can use it for matzah. So the Gemara says, Va'amai, why is it that you're allowed to bake it on Yom Tov? Just like we said, that when you have dough, which is half owned by a Jew and half owned by a non-Jew, you have to split it before you bake it, and you can't just bake the whole thing. Here the implication is, if you're baking dough for animals and for human beings, you're allowed to bake the whole thing. Va'amai, Va'ayev Sherla Miflegei Belisha, why don't you just divide it while you're kneading it? And then you'll bake a few loaves of bread for the shepherds and give it to them. And the ones that you're baking for the animals, you won't give to them. Right? You won't bake. So the Gemara says, Shani Isis Klovim, Ahol V'Efshar L'Faisan B'Nevela. So the Gemara says, no. Because even if, when you bake, let's say you have three loaves of bread. So even though in theory, you're planning on giving one of them to the dogs, and two of them to the shepherds, and therefore you should only bake the two of them that you're giving to the human beings, not the one you're giving to the animals. It's not really true that you're dead set on giving the food to the dogs, right? Let's say one of your sheep dies over Yom Tov. So then you'll just take the carcass and you'll throw it to the dogs, and then the bread will be left over and you'll eat it. And you know that going in, right? That you're, if you don't have any other meat, if no other food comes to feed the dogs, so then you'll give them some of the bread. If there happens to be other food, right? There's a dead sheep, there's a dead anything, so you'll give it to them. Which means that in your mind, all of the bread is potential human food, and that's why you're allowed to bake it, which is not true by dough, which is half owned by a Jew and half owned by a non-Jew. Because there, you're not allowed to have the portion which belongs to the non-Jew, because it's his. So Gemara says, wait a second. This logical argument, that since in theory I could use the something else to feed the animals, and therefore I could eat all of the dough, even though I'm not planning on eating all the dough, the fact that I could is sufficient to make it permitted. That's what we called in Psachim, Hoil, right? That the, as we'll see in a moment, right? The Gemara has this principle that according to Rabbah, if you cook on Yom Tov for the weekday, you don't get Malkus, right? Even though it's Usur, you're not allowed to prepare for the weekday, you don't get Malkus, because in theory, if guests came an hour before Yom Tov was over, you'd give them the food, even though you were planning on having it on Isru Chag, right? If guests came, you would give it to them. Therefore, it's not totally impossible that this is related to Yom Tov, which is a parallel svara to this dog argument. So there, you shouldn't get Malkus. The Gemara says, but Rav Chitza doesn't hold of that. Because the Gemara says in Psachim, if you bake on Yom Tov for the purpose of Chol, Rav Chista Omer Loke. Rav Chista says, look, you get Malkus, and Rabbah Omer Eino Loke. And Rabbah says, you don't get Malkus. Rav Chista Omer Loke Lo Amrin Ha'ol Maklai Lo Archim. We don't say, according to Rav Chista, that since guests could come, it's as if it's ready for those guests now. Rabbah says we do say that, and if we don't get Malkus. So how can you say that according to Rav Chista, we pretend that maybe you'll give the bread to the dogs, and therefore it's mutter to bake the whole thing? We don't say the same thing by cooking on Yom Tov. We don't say maybe guests will come. According to Rav Chista, that doesn't help. So the Gemara says, Ela lo tema hoil. So reject that. The Efshar, whole of the Efshar, don't say it's possible. Elokon de Islay Nevela, Devada Efshar Lefaisan Menevela. The case isn't where you might get a carcass, it's where you actually have other food for the dog. You might end up giving the dog some food anyways, but if fact is that you have other food for the dog, you're planning on eating all of the bread, you might end up giving some of the bread to the dogs, but it's true that you're planning on eating all the bread. Yeah, Alan.
But that's like, L'chadchila, I'm planning on using it to feed my Jewish people.
Right, and that's what the Gemara ends up having to say, which is,
it's like pashut.
Right, so that's going to be what we're going to have to come back to, what exactly the case of Isis Klavim is. Right, the Yerushalmi has three opinions. It seems that Isis Klavim, at least according to some of the positions of the Yerushalmi, is not just bread I intend for dogs, but is low quality bread, which I normally would give to dogs. Right? So it's not totally obvious because human beings may eat it, but normally you don't eat it. Right? So yes, you're planning.
But if I'm going in, and I already know I have enough other food for the dogs.
Correct, but it's the type of thing where you know realistically you might end up giving it to the dogs because it's not such great quality. So you're not planning on it, but it's in the back of your mind. So it's an in-between case, which is what the Gemara is getting at. But again, the details of Isis Klavim we're going to have to come back to. But you're right. I mean, part of the problem here is what does Isis Klavim even mean?
Okay, just...
Yeah.
Okay. If you had bread... If you're going to make excess bread, but you're going to eat part, and you may have guests, that's permissible.
Correct.
Okay. So dogs is a separate category. In other words, if you were making bread, because he has full ownership of all the dough. It's not like the case of the goy, where the goy owns half the dough. He has full ownership of all the dough. If he is baking it for himself, but has extra for the dogs, is that not the same thing as when he has extra for guests, or it's different?
It is, unless he intends to give it to the dogs. Right? The question here is, what if in the back of the mind he knows it might go to the dogs?
I think it has to do with the quality of the food.
Right, and that again is coming back to what exactly is this klavimin. Is what we're going to have to hold... This is what, when I said we have to see a lot of Gemara, that this is the problem, is that there's a lot of problems in this Gemara. But so far what we've seen in this unit is that the Gemara assumes that you're not allowed to cook for a non-Jew or for dogs. And what that entails is not just that you can't cook for them, right, meaning make a separate meal for a non-Jew. It even means that you have to take into account when you have a co-owned object that if you could get away with avoiding cooking for the non-Jew, you have to actively avoid it. Right? It's not just that it's not enough to say that you aren't allowed to cook a separate meal for a non-Jew. You even have to avoid being in a situation where, right, I could have just divided it, right? Because here, you're saying, look, everything is kneaded together. I'm just going to throw everything to the oven. You might have thought that's fine. The Gemara says, no, you have to actively calculate and say, this is mine, and I'm allowed to bake this. The only time that's not true is in the case of the animal, where I can shech the animal. I can't get to my portion unless I shech it. So then, yes, I shech it for a non-Jew. That's not why I did it. I did it for myself.
Okay. And the other difference is because with the meat, he can't.
That's the point. So therefore, right. Even though it's true that it's going to the non-Jew, it's considered being done for the right. Jew because there's no other way. Right. Okay. So that's the Gemara's assumption. But then, the Gemara says, okay, but Bali Minei Merav Huna. Hani Bnei Baga Derama Layu Kimcha Devenei Chela Ma Lafosa B'Yom Tov. Let's say you have an army. And the king obligates the Jews to bake on behalf of his army. Now, presumably, the simplest understanding of this Gemara, and how most Rishonim take it, is that we're talking about, not talking about a case where the king forces the Jews to use their own dough. It's where the non-Jews give their dough, they just don't have ovens, and you're required to bake on their behalf in your oven. Okay, so the non-Jewish army comes, they have provisions, they have raw provisions, but they don't have it baked, and the law requires that you have to prepare the food for them. So now, Amar Lehu Chazina. So what's the halacha? So they say, well, let's see. Iyave le rifta liyanuka, v'lo kafti, kol chada v'chada chazi liyanuka, v'share, v'ilav asur. If, in the process of baking, the army wouldn't care if you took some of the dough and you gave it to a child, so then it's permitted to bake the whole thing. And if not, it's prohibited. So now here already, right, we have a problem. Because the first unit that we saw assumed that if you can divide co-owned dough, you're obligated to. And here we have dough, which is partially going to go to Jews and partially going to non-Jews, and the Gemara says it's permitted. So you seem to have two contradictory Gemaras following each other, and as we'll see, one of the central questions that we are going to have to answer is there in fact a contradiction, in which case we just have to chalk this up to a machlokes, and say there's two opinions here about whether you're allowed to bake co-owned dough, or whether you're obligated to divide it. Or is there a difference between case 1 and case 2? And that is a machlokas Rashi Tosfos. The Gemara then continues. Vatan.
This is obviously not a case of onus.
Correct. As the, right, this, presumably we'll get to next week, but I'll just throw it out because it's obvious. As the Achronim note, clearly we're not talking about a case where it's pikuach nefesh.
Right.
Right? If it's pikuach nefesh, it would be mutter. Right? The question is, presumably, where there's going to be monetary loss.
Uh-huh.
Right? And monetary loss, because it's an issur d'oraisa of cooking on Yom Tov, so therefore you should be obligated to give right to give it up. Because while by an assay you only have to give up a fifth of your wealth, to not violate an assay, by a losa you have to give up everything.
Steinfeld appears to be saying that it's the flour and the baking. It's not, it's the Jews... flour as well.
Right, so I'm right now, like I said most Rishonim. I'm going like most Rishonim. We'll see that this is not obvious. As I said, this is only opening up the sugya, right? I said this in an email like twice for that reason, right? We're opening up the sugya. This is one of those sugyas. We have to see it to see all the problems. Because yes, one of the solutions may be whose dough is this, right? So right now, I already hinted at the solution that most Rishonim are going to provide, which is this is not the Jews' dough. Right, if it's the non-Jews' dough, then there's an easy distinction to make, which is when you co-own dough, so I can take mine and you can take yours. If we don't own it, it's the non-Jews, the only reason they allow me to give it to the child is because I'm doing them a favor, or I'm following the law and baking it for them, so then it's parallel not to the case of the co-owned dough, but the co-owned animal, where I can't have access to any of the dough unless I do their bidding and bake it. Right, so we're going to see that's going to be the position of Tosfos. But this is going to be the Machlokas Rashi Tosfos. But that's why I sort of elided that point. But yes, right, that's the problem here. So then it says, V'hatanya, Maisa b'Shimon HaTeimani, Shelo ba'emesh l'veis ha'medrash. There was a case where Shimon HaTeimani didn't come. Now what emesh means, I don't know if we'll ever get to this. But last night.
He says Belila.
Right, so Emesh means last night, but the question is, what night are we talking about, right? And the Acharonim have long, long dionim about when exactly, because the assumption is that people were having shear on the first night of Yom Tov, right, which is a very strange thing to do, right? Why would you have shear on the first night of Yom Tov? So the Acharonim get into whether that's actually what's going on here, but let's assume that's what's going on. So B'Shachar is Matzah Rabbi Yehuda Midmava, and Amar Lo Mivnei Ma Lo Vasa Emesh Lo Vesa Medrash, or actually, or maybe after Yom Tov. That's part of the question here. Is it first night or second? Isru Chag. But okay, whatever. Why didn't you come yesterday? Amar lo, Baleshes Bali, Reinu Uviksha Lachtov is a kol ha'ir, V'shachadnu lem Egel, V'echalnu V'artanum L'shalom. There was an army who came, and they wanted to destroy the city, so we appeased them by shechting animals for them. So Amar lo, Tameh Aniyim lo Yotzat Secharchem V'hefseidchem, said, I'm shocked that you did this because you lost more than you gained. Sharei Amra Torah. And now we get to the source for this entire Gemara. The Torah says, Lochem. Right? Ach asher yachol lechem. Hu levado yaseh lechem. Right? Ach asher yachol lechol nefesh. Hu levado yaseh lechem. Right? Anything which you need to eat is allowed to be done for you. For you, v'lo lo de kochavim. But you can't cook for non-Jews. The Gemara says, why? V'amai. Isn't the case of Shimon HaTeimani like the case of the army above, where they were allowed to eat from it? Hachazel meichel minei. So Amar Rav Yosef, no, egel treif ahavai, it was treif meat. V'achazel klavim, but couldn't they feed it to dogs? So the Gemara says, that's true, but tanoihi, whether you're allowed to feed it to dogs and you're allowed to cook for dogs on Yom Tov is itself machlokes. Titanya, achashe yochel chol nefesh ulevado yotze lochem, mimash mashemar shenemar lichol nefesh, when we say, all souls, shoman, afilu nefesh behema b'mashma, that means even animals. Ki'inyon shenemar maki nefesh behema yishal mena. Like we know in the case of damages, Talmud lomar, no, lochem, lochem, lo leklovin, diri riosi aglili. Rabbi Kiva omer, afil nefesh behema b'mashma, you are allowed to cook for dogs. Imken matam lomar lochem, what does lochem exclude? Lochem lo leovdi kochavim. You can't cook for non-Jews. Which, again, as we know, the censors changed Nachri to Ovid Kochavim, and therefore the assumption of all Rishonim, except for one, is that V'lo L'Ovdei Kochavim means V'lo L'Nachri, any non-Jew. If you had to guess who's going to be the outlier there, he's always the outlier. He says this in, I think, 141 places, right? Right, Clapper once did a count of this. The Meiri, right, who says that this is only idolaters and not non-idolatrous non-Jews, but bracketing the position of the Meiri, non-Jews are excluded. Umara itza l'rabo says haklavim lo tzlei zovu kochav. And why would you say it's better to cook for animals than for non-Jews? The Gemara says very simple. Mar mani is haklavim shemuzonos on alecha. We're not talking about random animals. We're talking about your animals, and you're obligated to feed them. Umota ani is ovid kochavim shein muzonos on alecha. You don't have to feed the non-Jews, and therefore it's not in the. It's not within the dispensation of Lochem. Now, what happens if you have a non-Jew who you do have to feed, like your servants? So, some of the Rishonim are going to say, yes, you're right. We're only excluding non-Jews that you don't have to feed. Non-Jews you have to feed, you're allowed to cook for them. Maybe. But that's going to be one of the open questions on this Gemara. Okay. The next unit of Gemara deals with Mukta. I just want to point to one line, which is going to be the last piece to this puzzle, which is in the middle of this sugya. There's one line where Rabbi Shua ben Levi says that not only are you not allowed to cook for non-Jews, but there's a gzeira derabanan that you're not allowed to invite non-Jews to your house on Yom Tov for a meal, because since you can't cook for them, if you invite them, you're going to cook for them. Right? So just to see the extent of it. Okay. So that's the basis of this Gemara. Right? So as you can see, there's a lot going on in this Gemara. Right? We have the first unit, which assumes that only when the only way to access the food, i.e. in the case of Shechita, are you allowed to shecht for non-Jews, but by the case of the flour, you're not allowed to bake the non-Jew stuff because you could divide it before you need the dough. But then we have a Gemara which at first glance contradicts that. Because the Gemara lowers the standard, and the Gemara says you don't have to. It's not that it's impossible to access it, but as long as the Jew could get anything, so then it's permitted to even cook on behalf of the non-Jew, right? And then the Gemara raises the source for this whole issue, which is lochem lo lov zichavim, and then gets into the question of that really excludes non-Jews, animals, both, and then we'll have to get into how do we paskin. Okay, there is one other Gemara, though, that we already saw that complicates the sugya, if it wasn't complicated enough, yet further. Which is the Gemara in Yud Zayin had said, if you remember, that what are you allowed to do on Yom Tov? Let's say you only need one loaf of bread, but you have a big oven, and the bread bakes better if you fill the oven. So what are you allowed to do on Yom Tov?
Fill the oven.
Right. So the last Gemara you have to figure out is, okay, in addition to all of this, what if by baking the non-Jews' dough, it fills up the oven, which it obviously does, because there's more bread. Why shouldn't you be allowed to bake for the non-Jews, simply based on the fact that, in general, you're allowed to bake more bread as long as it fills up the oven more, because it improves the quality of the bread. So, we're going to have two ways of getting out of that. Either to argue on that Gemara, right? Well, actually, three ways. Argue on the Gemara, assume this is a case where it doesn't make it better, or assume that for some reason, the only time you're allowed to bake extra bread if it's for a Jew, and then we have to explain why that hetter would be limited to a Jew, because at least at first glance, it shouldn't be limited. The point is that you're allowed to bake extra stuff on Yom Tov simply to make the original loaf that you needed better. Why should that be limited to a Jew? Right. So that's going to be the last Gemara that we have to put into play. Okay. Yeah, Alan. No? No. Okay. Okay. So that's the, right, that's so far the questions we have to deal with. So let's start with the last one, okay? Let's start with the last question, right? Just on a practical level, how did we get to this point, right? The Gemara assumes that you're allowed to shecht an animal, even if only half of it is owned by a Jew, because you can't access the Jew's portion without shechting the whole thing. But by the bread, you can't, because you could divide it. And yet, we know that in general, you're allowed to bake things you don't need on Yom Tov, right? That's Mimalea Isha's Kol HaKedera, right? It's called Tanur. It's called HaKedera. The woman is allowed to bake the entire oven filled with bread, especially in their time, because it improved the quality of the bread, right? Again, we talked about whether this is true in our ovens, right? It was true in their ovens, right? They had the big cone-like, right, old whatever, like lava ovens, right? And therefore, there's an open fire at the bottom, right? It's a cone, just to remember, right? It's a cone. You cut off the top. On the bottom, there's a little door, right? You put in the coals on the bottom. There's an open flame underneath, and you put the bread on the side of this cone structure, right? So the more bread you have, the less the impact of the heat, because it's an open flame, right? And therefore, it was a machlokas rishonim. Is it that you put more bread in to protect the bread from extreme heat, or does it act as insulator and you want it to increase the heat? But either way, because of the way it's structured, the more bread that's in there, it actually affects the way the other breads bake. Okay, so why isn't that sufficient to permit the whole thing, right? Even if you assume that you're not allowed to cook for non-Jews, and even if you assume you should be able to divide it and give it to the non-Jew before, why can't you just say, okay, I'm going to fill up the whole oven, not because I'm giving it to the non-Jew, but because it improves my bread. And just like I'm allowed to shecht the animal to give half of it to the non-Jew, if that's the only way I can get my bread, so I'm allowed to bake the non-Jew's bread as long as it makes my bread bake better. Why aren't those things parallel? Because of the halacha, mamalei isha's kol akadera, right? Mamalei isha's kol atanur. Right? In the end of the day, just like I need the whole to shech the whole animal to get my stuff, I need to bake the whole bread, right, to make my bread bake better. Why isn't that mutter? That's an explicit Gemara in Daf Yud Zayin that is permitted, right? It's very nice. You want to tell me that I have 20 Jewish friends and my oven fits 20 loaves and we're each putting in a loaf, so then I can't take the non-Jew's loaf and put it in. Fine. But that's not the case. Let's say it's a case where I want to put in 20 loaves and I have 10 of my own and 10 of the non-Jews. So why can't I just put in all 20? Right? That's an explicit Gemara. So that's Tosfos's question. If you look at Tosfos number 2 here, right? He says, Chetzeh shel nachar chetzeh shel Yisrael. Shel nachar chetzeh shel Yisrael. He said, V'im tomar. He said, put aside everything. Ha'amra le'el, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Omer, M'maleya, Isha tanur, pas, afal pi, she'ena tzricha le'pas, achas, m'pnei she'pas nefes yafe, v'zman she'a tanur malei, v'shari lefas, b'yom tov afilu l'chatchila. I don't get this whole question, because I understand you think it's usher to bake or cook for non-Jews. I understand that you can divide the bread and give him his dough before you bake it. That's very nice. But you're allowed to bake bread that you don't need on Yom Tov to improve the quality of your own bread. So who cares whether that bread belongs to you or belongs to the non-Jew?
Wouldn't that issue be the same whether you were baking the extra bread for a goy or you were baking for it after?
Correct. It'd be the same for you. It'd be the same for Chol. It'd be the same for a dog. It'd be the same for everybody. That tells us the questions. I don't get the whole issue. Right? Once you put in this caveat that you're allowed to bake to improve the quality of your own bread, so on some theoretical level, you're not allowed to bake for a non-Jew. But the only time that's going to have any implication is when you have 20 other loaves of bread that you're baking anyways for Yom Tov, right? But everyone understands, when we said a woman can fill up the oven to bake, to improve the one loaf you need for Yom Tov, everyone understands that means there's 19 loaves that are for tomorrow, or 19 loaves that are for a non-Jew, or 19 loaves that are for a dog. And the implicit in Tosa's question is that there's no difference between baking for a non-Jew and baking for tomorrow, because both of them are not under the halacha of achasher yachol l'chol nefesh. The heter is only to cook for a Jew on Yom Tov, not to cook for a non-Jew, not to cook for animals, and not to cook for the day after Yom Tov.
Can't you say that theoretically, though, you can eat any of the loaves that you put in with, you know, in the first case, but if you're baking for a non-Jew, you can't.
Ah, so one possibility is going to say, no, there is still a difference,
yeah.
Right? Let's see Tosfos, right? So Tosfos is going to pick up that. He says, So he said, okay, first possibility. So I said, logically, what are the possibilities? One is to reject the Gemara, right? So possibility one that Tosfos suggests but rejects is to reject the above Gemara, is to say, no, we don't paskin that you're allowed to fill up the whole oven. Right? It's just not true. You're right. If you thought that you were allowed to bake, fill up the whole oven to improve the quality of the bread, then you're allowed to fill up the oven even with non-Jewish bread. But maybe we don't paskin that way. So Gemara says no. So Tosa said that's not true. We do paskin that way. Right? Ha'hilchos like Reb Shimon d'Matir. Right? So the attempt to say, okay, you're right, there's a contradiction, reject one of the two Gemaras, it doesn't work because we accept both the halacha. That's possibility one, but we reject it. Okay, Tosa then says, V'yesh lomar, d'shayni hasa, the chol ha'pas shel Yisrael, sherashus biyado lechol kol echad ve'echad ozeh ozeh. Right, so Tosa's second answer exactly what Tali said, which is they're not exactly parallel, because until now we've understood that why is it permitted to bake the 20 loaves of bread? So the simple understanding of Gemara is you can bake 20 loaves of bread to make one loaf of bread better, and that's it. And if that was the case, you're right. There's no reason to say I can bake 19 loaves for tomorrow or 19 loaves for a non-Jew. There's no reason to say those are different. But now Tosfos says it's not true. That's not the whole story. You thought that was the heter. That was the reason it was mutter. It was a combination. It was that, yes, I understand that really you're baking the 19 loaves for tomorrow. But the combined fact that the extra 19 loaves improve your challah for Yom Tov meal, and the fact that in theory you could eat the bread today, combined to make it enough ochel nefesh that you're allowed to bake the extra 19. But there was an unspoken assumption in the Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin that it's not enough to say that the 19 loaves improve the one loaf. That's not actually sufficient. You need a combination of the fact that it's at for sure helping ochel nefesh of today, and that the other 19 loaves are at least potential ochel nefesh. And only when you have both factors can we say that which is not true ochel nefesh is mutter. Right? Because we already said that you aren't allowed to bake just because guests might come. It's not Asur Midaraisa, according to Rabbah, or you don't get Malkus, right? Maybe it's not Asur Daraisa, or it is Asur Daraisa, but you don't get Malkus. That's Hoil. So you can't do that L'chadchila. But if you have a reason to do it today, plus some Hoil-like Svara, then it's Mutar L'chadchila. But you don't have that with a non-Jew's bread, because you can't eat it at all. So Tosfos for a Svara is like totally. That's possibility one or two, however you want to count it. The ode, Dilma Mikla Le'archim. And he says, furthermore, this is what we call Hoil, that guests might come. Where there was an unspoken assumption, I'm assuming like certain Achronim, but we'll see that it's not clear, right? That maybe guests will come. So it was a combination of factors, that the 19 loaves make the one loaf better, and if 50 guests stormed my house 2 hours before Yontif was over, I would give it to them. It's a combination of Hoil plus the fact that it improves the quality of the one loaf of bread. Aval hacha de chetzeh shel nachri asur lafosa b'yom tov. Right, so what you get here now is, if we divide it again, so we say, right, how do you get out of that Gemara? So one possibility is to reject it. So that's the first possibility, and Tosfos turns it down. The next possibility is to say that when the Gemara said you're allowed to bake 20 loaves of bread for the sake of one, we thought that was telling you that ochel nefesh is so expansive that you're allowed to do whatever you need to improve your one loaf of bread, even in slight quality, even bake an extra 19 loaves that are for tomorrow. It's not true. It's only the combination of the fact that it somewhat helps your one loaf, plus the fact that at some level it's a potential ochel nefesh. You need the combination of factors. Neither of them is sufficient. Hoil is not sufficient because I'm not actually planning on eating the bread today. And it's not enough of an improvement of quality in the one loaf of bread to cook 19 loaves for tomorrow. But if I combine those and I say, it's potential ochel nefesh, plus it has some sort of ochel nefesh implications for today, those combine to allow it. And because in the case of the non-Jew's bread, you remove it because you aren't allowed to eat it at all, you only have one factor, and one factor is insufficient. That's position of Tosfos. Okay.
Now that Tosfos came out and said it, I'm surprised that didn't seem obvious already from the lashon of kol chadav chadav chazali inuga.
But this only works like Tosfos, because what we're going to see in a minute, as I mentioned, right? Tosfos paskins like the next Gemara, and assumes that there's no contradiction between this Gemara and the case of chazal inuga. Rashi thinks the next Gemara is not lahalacha, or this Gemara is not lahalacha. One of those has to be rejected, right? So you're right. But that's because Tosfos paskins like this Gemara and the Gemara in Daf Yud Zayin and the Gemara at the end of the Amud. Only because he has all of them is that true. But yes, right? Tosfos is influenced, seemingly, by the end of the Gemara. Okay. But now, what exactly does Tosfos mean? Right? So I have a vague notion of what Tosfos means, but there's still two ways to take the answer of Tosfos. One is to assume that he actually means Hoel. Right? That the principle we know of Hoil, namely, the reason that according to Rabbah you don't get Malkus for cooking on Yom Tov for the day after Yom Tov, is because there's the potential that you could eat it today. So when Tosfos invokes Hoil Miklai Archim, he literally means it. And what he's telling you is that ho'il is enough to remove malchus, but it gets it to such a low iser that once you add that other, right, other factor, namely that it improves the one loaf of bread, that tips it from not malchus to mutter lechatchila. Right, that's one possibility. The other possibility doesn't really mean ho'il, and that's a machlokas achronim. So if you look at two, the Bnei Yeshua says as follows: it says al karchoch nireh di kavanasam bazeh. What does Tosfos really mean? Dimehai taima dipas nefe yafe dirshimin alazar lo shayech lahatir iser da'oraisa. The position of Rav Shimon ben Elazar that the improvement of one loaf of bread is enough to permit the other 19, that isn't true. Now, this is how he understands it: to be matir and iser da'oraisa. Now this comes down to the question of what does ho'il do? So what exactly is Rabbah saying when Rabbah says that ho'il makes it you don't get malchus when you cook from Yom Tov to the day after Yom Tov because you could eat it on Yom Tov? So there's three possibilities of what Rabbah means. One is that it's still usur d'oraisa to cook from Yom Tov to the day after Yom Tov, but because I can't prove what you're doing is Asr, I can't give you Malkos, but it's fully Asr Daraisa. Two is that Rabbah is saying that no, it's actually Mutter on a Daraisa level to cook from Yom Tov to the day after Yom Tov, because it's always in potential for Yom Tov. But Dirabbanan, it's Mutter, sorry, it's Asr. The third possibility is, no, Ho'el actually tells you it's Mutter to cook from Yom Tov to the day after Yom Tov. That one's unlikely, because the Gemara seems to not say that. But at least that's, in theory, possible. The Pnei Yeshua takes possibility number two, that a ho'il actually removes the Isser D'oraisa completely. Rabbah isn't just saying that I can't punish you for cooking from Yom Tov to day after Yom Tov, because I can't prove that it's not Yom Tov cooking. He's saying it's on a D'oraisa level, because anything I cook on Yom Tov I might eat, it's permitted on a daraisa level, lechatchila.
Then it's irrelevant if it made the bread better. In other words...
So that's what he says. He says, what is Rav Shimon ben Elazar saying? We thought Rav Shimon ben Elazar was saying that it makes the bread better, and therefore makes it ochel nefesh, and therefore it overrides the iser daraisa. The Pnei Yeshua says, what does Tosfos mean? Tosfos is telling you that no. Rav Shimon ben Elazar, when Rav Shimon ben Elazar says it improves the quality of the loaf of bread and therefore it's mutter to cook, you thought that made it ochel nefesh, and it's not true at all. What made it ochel nefesh, the reason you're allowed to break 20 loaves of bread even though you only need one, is because of ho'il. Ho'il, because in theory if guests came I could give it to them, that's what made it mutter on a daraisa level. The improving of quality was only necessary to waive the dirabbanan. Because on a rabbinic level, we forbade you from cooking from Yom Tov the day after Yom Tov. On a biblical level, once we recognize that you could give it to guests, you're allowed to lechatchila bake it for the day after Yom Tov. Because since in the back of your mind you know that if guests showed up, you'd give it to them, it's automatically ochel nefesh. But the Rabbanan said that's not enough. The Rabbanan said it can't be. It can't be. Because then what is everybody going to do? Right? If... in a case like now, right? Think about our multiple Yom Dovim. What is everybody going to do, right? If you're already cooking on second day Yontif, you're going to cook for Shabbos, right? Which is a day later, because otherwise you have 2 days of Yontif, Erev Shabbos, then Erev Yontif, then Yontif, right? Then Erev Shabbos, then Erev Yontif, right? If you keep cooking, it's impossible. So what's everybody going to do? They're going to cook 5 pots of soup on the second day of Yom Tov. They're going to say it's for, you know, their snack an hour before Yom Tov, and then they're going to put it in the freezer, and then they're going to bring it out on Friday night, because they don't want to be cooking all day on Sunday after cooking all day of Yom Tov, right? But so the Rabbanan said, it's not sufficient to say, I could give it to guests. Because then what you're going to end up doing is you're just going to spend all day on Yom Tov cooking for the day after Yom Tov, for the Shabbos after Yom Tov, for the Yom Tov after Yom Tov. You're just going to keep cooking, right? So derabbanan we aser it, but let's say you. But on a biblical level, it's mutter. But how do I waive the rabbinic iser? If I can argue plausibly that I'm also benefiting today, so then the rabbinic iser will be waived as well. So the Pnei Yeshua says, what is Tosfos doing when he invokes ho'il? He's telling you that ho'il actually gets rid of the Isser Daraisa completely. On a biblical level, it's actually mutter to cook from Yom Tov to the day after Yom Tov, as long as you know, in theory, you would give it to guests who showed up an hour before Yom Tov was over. Rabbinically, it's prohibited, but we'll waive the rabbinic prohibition if it improves the quality of your cooking for today, because since it's only a rabbinic prohibition anyways, any way of explaining why this is for Yom Tov is enough to waive the rabbinic prohibition, right? So he says, since leka isur daraisa may high time ashiuchol lechol ze kemoze, since you could eat any of it anyways, there's no biblical prohibition. David kemo ho'il, right? So he said it's like ho'il, and the fact that I could eat any of it. Kidiisa perikhu over in maskander b'yirmi of zerayin sham ol mishum the ho'il miklol le'orchem, right? Either because a ho'il guest might come or ho'il I might eat it. The cave in the leka ella isura derabanan mahani l'rashba mehai high time at the pas nefes yafel lahatir af lichatchila kain yerali b'chavanas atosos. So the Pnei Yeshua says that what's going on in Tosos is actually a radical assumption of what the Gemara in Zion meant and what Ho'il meant. Right? I would have assumed that Ho'il meant it's still Asur Darais, I just can't punish you. And I thought that the Gemara in Daf Yud Zion that said you're allowed to bake 20 loaves to improve one loaf was telling you that because the one loaf is improved, that's Ochel Nefesh. The Pnei Yeshua tells you no. Tosos is telling you neither of those are true. Ho'il makes it that it's on a Daraisa level totally permitted to cook from Yom Tov for the day after Yom Tov because you might eat it on Yom Tov, and that's enough biblically. Rabbinically, it's prohibited, but I can waive the rabbinic prohibition as long in some backhanded way I can explain that it's for Yom Tov, i.e. it improves the quality of the one loaf. But if I remove that factor, sorry, the first factor, right, meaning it's the non-Jews, and therefore I remove Ho'il, the second factor, namely that it improves the one loaf of bread, is not sufficient to override the Isser Daraisa. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's saying, when the Pnei Yeshua is saying oil here,
he means actual oil.
Okay, but is he saying that you did not have to make some of it for yourself for Yontav?
Correct. According to Pnei Yeshua, on a biblical level, right, this is very radical.
But we've had another case where you've got an Erev Tavshilin, and that's called a Rema.
Okay, correct.
And it's not permitted.
Correct.
Okay, so how can he be applying oil here and making something that is aroma and making it permitted?
Because he assumes that it's only Asur Midrabanan. Right? You're right. I mean, this is very problematic, right? He assumes that the whole construct of Erev Tavshilin is solving a Darabanan problem to begin with.
Right, which I understand. I just have difficulty that he's not saying that you're making a portion for yourself today.
Correct. But he's saying on a biblical level, you don't have to. Right, he's saying only on a rabbinic level you have to.
But who's that according to? Who's the
Rabba? This is how he understands Rabba of Ho'il. Right, he thinks that Ho'il actually removes the Isser entirely on a biblical level. So Erev Tavshilin was only necessary to solve a Darabanan problem to begin with. Right, meaning basically the Pnei Yeshua takes the entire Gemara that we've learned, right, that you're not allowed to cook from Yom Tov to Chol, Yom Tov Shabbat, and say that's only an Isser Darabanan, right, and we solve that with Erev Tavshilin, and we build in exceptions as long as you're not doing harama. But all of that is rabbinic. The exceptions, all of those are derabanan. Because biblically, you could just cook from Yom Tov to Chol. You're not allowed to cook from Yom Tov to Chol, you're right, but it's never considered cooking from Yom Tov to Chol.
Where does he find that kind of lundus?
With one exception, right? The only exception would be like an hour before, possibly, would be an hour before the end of Yom Tov when you couldn't end up eating it. But short of that, right, short of it, that according to Rabba, the way the Pnei Yeshua is understanding, the only time it's biblically usur for you to cook on Yom Tov for Chol is like an hour before the end of Yom Tov when you couldn't eat it on Yom Tov. But if you did it in the morning, on a biblical level, it's mutter, right? And therefore, everything, Erev Tavshilin, all of that, is all solving their Darabanan problems to begin with. And the Harama is just a Harama on a Darabanan. Yes. It's very radical and very...
Is there anything that's making it mukhrach for Pnei Yeshua to say that?
What's making it mukhrach for him is that Tosos seems to invoke Ho'il, right? Actual Ho'il, yeah. Right? So what drives him is that Tosos had said you need both Ho'il and, right, the improved quality of the one loaf. But he says, I don't understand why. Ho'il doesn't make it mutter, right? I mean, either it makes it mutter or it doesn't make it mutter.
Yeah, well,
right?
Make it, mutter.
It should make it, or it shouldn't make it mutter, right? So, so he has to say what it must mean is that it makes it mutter d'oraisa and asur d'rabbanan. Mimalei isha kol tanur makes it mutter even d'rabbanan, but without hoel, it's still asur d'oraisa, and that's why mimalei isha kol tanur doesn't solve the problem of the goy's isa. Okay. The Rosh Yosef in 3 says Umiu Lael Divrei Amasra Vahaya Kasu the Halacha Kirav Chizda Dilis Le Hoel. Right. So now the Rosh Yosef says, "Well, wait a second. If the Pnei Yeshua is correct, namely that the only way to jive Daf Yud Zayin and Daf Chav Aleph together is by assuming Hoel." Then I have a different way of solving the contradiction between Daf Yud Zayin and Daf Chaf Aleph, which is to say that Daf Yud Zayin, when it says that you, on Daf Yud Zayin, when it says you can fill up the whole tanur, you can fill up the whole thing because of Hoel, it must just be, right? No, sorry. Right. According to the Rosh Yosef, once you assume that this Gemara is dependent on Hoel, right? So then all you have to say is, okay, but remember there's a machlokas about Hoel. Right? There's a machlokas about Hoel. So it must be that the way to solve the problem, right? The way to solve the contradiction between the Gemaras is going to say, okay, this Gemara that says that you're not allowed to bake something for the Jew and the non-Jew must not hold of Hoel. The Gemara above, which says that you're allowed to fill up the whole thing, right, because you need one loaf of bread holds of Hoel. Right? Remember, this is Rav Chisda. Right? Rav Chisda is the author here, and Rav Chisda rejects Hoel. So all you have to do is know that Rav Chisda is the author. If Tosas is right, that you need a Hoel to explain this, right, to explain how would be mutter, right? Fine. Rav Chisda thinks it's Aser because he doesn't hold of Hoel. Did I say that right? I'll say that one more time. You'll start again as if I said nothing. Right? Again, if Tosas is correct, that in order to permit baking the 20 loaves for the one loaf, you need Hoel. You need the combination of Hoel plus the improved quality. So then, why is it that in our Gemara, the Gemara doesn't bring that up, right? Why doesn't our Gemara say you're allowed to bake the non-Jews' bread as long as it improves quality? So the Bnei Yeshua said you need both factors. But the Rosh Yosef just gives a different possibility. Is if you need both factors, well, Rav Chisda doesn't hold of Hoel. So maybe Rav Chisda really will reject Daf Yud Zayin. Right? Because remember, Tosas didn't want to say that we rejected Daf Yud Zayin because we paskin like the Gemara and Daf Yud Zayin. That's very nice. Except the author here is Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda doesn't hold of Hoel. So maybe the Gemara here, which says that you're not allowed to bake on behalf of the non-Jews, is because you don't have Hoel. And without the two factors, it's usher. But you're right. According to Rabbah, who says Hoel, right, you would always have Hoel, and therefore you would be allowed to bake the non-Jews because, right. He's taking Tosas' svara, but we're using it against him. Right, he's saying once you say this dependent on Hoel, you just have to say okay, the Gemara in Yud Zayin accepts Hoel, and therefore, since Hoel exists in theory, you're allowed to bake it. Here, Rav Chisda rejects Hoel to begin with. Okay, so that's another way. If you assume it's actual Hoel here.
When you read Tosfot, it's almost the exact opposite of what the Pnei Yeshua is saying. In other words, Tosfot is saying, you're cooking it for yourself for Yontif. You're being allowed to bake the extra because either you don't know which one of the loaves you're going to take at the end and it's all for a Jew, or when you bake it, you're baking a loaf for yourself, so it's for the Ochel Nefesh. It improves the quality of the bread. And you could say for the other loaves, even if you're not eating it, you could say Hoel. So Hoel is not the first thought, it's the second thought.
Yes. And that's why the Chasam Sofer, right, says that the Pnei Yeshua totally got this wrong. Right, the Pnei Yeshua and the Rosh Yosef assume that Tosas literally meant Hoel, that Hoel was actually functioning here. Right, and that what's really going on is that it's about Hoel, and then the improved quality is an afterthought. right? Which is not what it sounds like in Tosfos. Some Zohar says you're right, because Tosfos never meant ha'il. That's not what's going on in Tosfos at all, right? All this Cheshmon, I reject this entire analysis of the Pnei Yeshua. He says no. Because makom hachal lo mitam ha'ol asin Allah, ella huter mitam tzorech atzmo. Right? No, 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 no. It's the other way around. It's not. The Pnei Yeshua assumes it starts with ha'il. Ho'el gets it from a deraita to derabanan, and then the improved quality of the one loaf gets it from a derabanan to mutter. But how he's right, Tosfos is the opposite, right? We start with mamalei isha kol tanur plus ho'el. It's not ho'el plus mamalei isha kol tanur. It's the other way around. So he says no. Tosfos meant the exact opposite. Like how he said no. First we say it's mutter. It's absolutely mutter to bake when the 20 loaves to improve the one loaf. Ubilvad shloya ofa lehedya letzorach klol klav munachrim. But there was an implied clause on Daf Yud Zayin, which was, when I bake the 20 loaves, what am I not allowed to do? I'm allowed to bake it as long as, what do I say? I'm baking the 20 loaves for the one loaf. But if I say I'm baking the 20 loaves for tomorrow and I happen to know that it improves the quality of the one loaf, then it doesn't work. Right, the issue here is what was your kavana? If your central kavana was to do the mutter thing, then the fact that there's an ancillary benefit that you have extra food for tomorrow, or extra food for non-Jews, or extra food for animals, then it's mutter. If your primary concern was for tomorrow, for non-Jews, and for animals, and then you try to matter it backhandedly by saying, oh, and by the way, it also helps one loaf, it doesn't matter. Right? It's all a question of which came first. That you're doing the 20 loaves for the one loaf, right? Or are you doing the 20 loaves because you want the 20 loaves, and you're trying to do harama by mattering it by saying, I need it for the one loaf. And so now the Chassam Sofer says, okay, but even without reading the Chassam Sofer, you should know what is going to happen. So why is our case, where you're baking half for the Jew and half for the non-Jew, like a case where you explicitly do it for the non-Jew, meaning you explicitly do it for the 19 loaves and not the one loaf? Because you have to give it to the non-Jew because it's his. You can't pretend that the reason you're baking the 10 loaves for the non-Jew are for you. The reason you're baking the 10 loaves for the non-Jew is because it's his. Not because it's for you, it's because it's his. And you have no choice but to give it to him. Therefore, your primary concern is him, not you.
Well, why can't you say that you want to use his loaves?
Ah, so he says, so what would come out is, yeah, it would be mutter if that was your concern. Right? If you approached it and said, I'm going to bake it to improve the quality of my bread, and look, I happen to have an extra 10 loaves here to bake because the non-Jew left his dough here, that would be mutter. If I bake the 10 loaves because the non-Jew wants his bread, and so then it's not mutter because my focus is for the non-Jew, and that's what he says. He says, it's, how do you deal with the two Gemaras? It's true, you could come up with a situation where it would be mutter to bake for non-Jews, but only if the focus was you. If the focus became the non-Jews, it would be like cooking for chol. Now, what does he assume, therefore, about ho'il? That ho'il doesn't permit it, right? Ho'il is asur midaraisa, it's just that there's no malchus, right? Which is what ho'il should mean,
so
right?
How does he explain on the other Gemara with the army?
Ah, so it's very simple. What does the Gemara say?
Can use it for
primary.
Right, if they won't let me give it to the child,
you can't do it.
Right, and this is what we'll see is, remember the Lashon of the Gemara, right? If you summarize the Gemara,
it's irrelevant. It's for the army.
Ah, but that's not what the Gemara says, right? Kol chada v'chadya chaza li'linuka. That's why the Gemara's phraseology is so important, is even though you said he's really baking for the army, since any loaf could be your child, I mean, what's the case? Right, you have your child sitting with you in the kitchen while you're baking. So each time, right, how are you going to get through baking 100 loaves? Right? I know this from home, right? How are you going to get through, right, cooking for Shabbos with, right, Aaron crawling around if you have snacks ready? You never know when you're going to need a snack, but the only way you're going to finish cooking for Shabbos is if you have snacks ready. So when you're baking 100 loaves, yes, you're baking for the non-Jews. But the only way you're going to manage to get through it is if at any point in that process, when your kid starts screaming, you can give him the loaf, which means every loaf, the child, is at the forefront of your mind. Even though the 100 loaves are the non-Jew, Right? The fact that any of the loaves, meaning, yes, each one of them, this is the army's loaf. But if at any point my kid screams, whatever he screams, the loaf that's in front of me is going to the kid. So who's first and foremost in my mind? My kid.
That's a bit of a stretch, though.
Except that's the Lashon of the Gemara. Right? Kol chad v'chada.
It's actuarial thinking, really. You know?
But it's the other way around.
You're there with the soldiers there. I mean, they see you giving them a hungry kid. And they're hungry?
Well,
and they haven't eaten?
But that's what the Gemara says. But that's exactly what the Gemara says. If they don't care, since at each one of them, it's not that some of it, it's kol chad v'chad. That's how they're reading it. Right? Is that this moves it.
Doesn't say when they don't care.
It's because they don't care.
If they're eating already, okay.
No, it's because they don't care. That's exactly the point. The way they're reading is because they don't care, that's why it's mutter. Okay, so that's what that's the Chassam Sofer solution, which deals with Howie's problem. So far, let's see one more. Let's just see the Meiri, and then we'll finish. This is where we're going to get to this week. Miri says, "V'yirali shafilo im mechavin v'zeh kedei l'malos mechila kagoyes atanur te pashalo yafe yoser." Even if you had kavana to improve the quality of your bread, asur shelo amru lahatir kain elul tzarich Yisrael, because it needed to be for a Jew. Now, why would this be true? So now, Miri introduces something else, and if you remember, this comes to something we've discussed before. When you say it's asur to cook for a non-Jew, is that because it's not ochal nefesh, or because there's a separate iser that makes it prohibited to do anything for a goy? It's not just that it's not for a Jew; is that doing it for a non-Jew is usser. So Meiri assumes it's the latter. If you do something for a non-Jew, that transforms it into something usser, and therefore, if it's for a Jew, right, if the Jew bakes 20 loaves, all for the one loaf. So even though 19 of them are for tomorrow, it's for a Jew. And therefore, it's not. There's no active Isser, it's just that it's not Ochal Nefesh. But since it improves the one loaf I'm going to eat on Yom Tov, it becomes Ochal Nefesh. But the second I do it for a non-Jew, it's not just not Ochal Nefesh, it's anti-Ochal Nefesh. And anti-Ochal Nefesh can't be solved by saying it improves the one loaf. Because now there's 19 loaves which are defined as not non-Ochal Nefesh, but anti-Ochal Nefesh, right? They're defined as for a non-Jew rather than not for a Jew, right? So this is very subtle thinking, right? He says, V'yesh ma'aron alai. Some people don't like this, right? Some people don't like this because they don't understand the distinction. V'ein divarim nirim, but they're wrong. Sharein edavar matzi l'mal z'tener shalo b'shal achirim. V'arei karama, he says, it has to be the case. Because, Ed, how often do you bake 20 loaves for one loaf? What are you talking about? Everyone knows that's a harama. Right? And it's usher with harama. So he said, if it's usher to do harama, then why in God's name is it mutter to bake 20 loaves for one loaf? Everyone knows that's a harama. You don't get malchus, fine. Leave that aside, right? Fine, but he said, so what's Miri getting at? He says, wait a second. How do I know this is true? Because otherwise, who are you kidding? If you think that we need to actively define this as ochel nefesh, then who are you kidding? You're not baking 20 loaves to improve the one loaf of bread. You're not. So therefore, it must be that no. To make something ochel nefesh is not so difficult. And therefore, sins, it's for a Jew, so therefore it's potential ochel nefesh. And once I can justify and say it's also for the one loaf, so it was all for a Jew anyway, so it was all within the category of ochel nefesh. It was just non-ochel nefesh. To move something from non-ochel nefesh to ochel nefesh is not so hard, and therefore it's not called harama. But to do it for a non-Jew, which is anti-ochel nefesh, right? You can't get away by saying, well, it improves one loaf. No, it's anti-ochel nefesh. The standards are higher. Okay.
So do you need both?
So according to him, you need Howell to get rid of Malchus. But you don't need Howell, right? He's not commenting on Tosfos. Right, he's just saying...
But you need to improve and you need...
Correct. Right, that's for a Jew.
Right.
Right? So what you end up having is, why is this Gemara, right, not in contradiction with the Gemara in Daf Yud Zayin? So either it is, right, and we only paskin like one of them, right? Or you need both that it's for a Jew and that it improves the quality for one of three reasons. Either Hoil gets you from a Daraisa down to Dirabanan, and doing it for the 20 loaves for the improvement of one loaf gets you from a Dirabanan to Mutter, But when it's for a non-Jew, because you have to give it to the non-Jew, there's no ho'il, and therefore it's left at a daraisa, and therefore simply improving the quality of the one for the 20 doesn't help in the nisr daraisa, and therefore when it belongs to the non-Jew, it's aser. That's the Pnei Yeshua. Chacham Sofer says the opposite. Right? The question is, kavana. Your first kavana has to be to improve the quality. Once it's to improve the quality, so then everything else falls into place. So in the case where you're baking 20 loaves for one loaf, your primary intent is the one loaf. But when you're baking for the non-Jew, you're doing it for the non-Jew because it's the non-Jew, and the fact that it improves the quality is secondary, and that's not mutter. The third possibility is the me'iri, which is that no, improving quality is only good enough when it's a question of ochel nefesh and non-ochel nefesh. But when it's ochel nefesh and anti-ochel nefesh, that doesn't work, because the improvement in quality is enough to waive the problem of non-ochel nefesh, but not anti-ochel nefesh. And when you do it for a non-Jew, that's anti-ochel nefesh. That's a separate iser. And to waive that, you need something much higher that improves the quality of one loaf. So that's, as I said, there are many layers to this Gemara. That's simply issue one, right? Which is, how do we square this Gemara with the Gemara in Daf Yud Zayin? Okay, we'll stop.